and you don't have to tell me their price. But if I wanted more capability than I got with the soda beam, the soda beam sounds to me like it gives me an awful lot of bang for the dollar. But if money was no object, if size was no object, of all the ones that you've ever become familiar with, what other functions does anybody else ever have? Other than the things that you have, the functions you have with the soda beam, are there other kinds of digital signal processing systems that give me more knobs, and what do those knobs do? What else could I do with digital signal processing of circuits that you have heard of? W2GXM, K2RIW, Grand Ridge.
K2RIW, W2GXM, I'm forgetting my own call. And if you want to go flat out, Dr. Bob Hiles just came out with his fancy-dancy parametric audio equalizer for receivers. That looks interesting. I don't even know if the price has been posted yet, but that looks really interesting. Dr. Heil just displayed it at the latest Hamvention, and it's all, of course, probably all over his website by now. K2RIW, WB2GXM.
When it comes to the horns and whistles that these kinds of circuits can have, can you name any other function that has ever existed that's beyond what's in the soda beam, or maybe the Bob Heil? Like maybe damping factor, or passband shape, or passband slope, or the exact shape of the left-hand skirt and the right-hand skirt of the filter, re-entrance characteristics, harmonic characteristics, and so on. Can you think of any other parameters where anyone else has ever presented a knob, so to speak, on these kinds of circuits? Over to you, Rich, K2RIW.
K2RIW, WB2GXM. Well, let's see. There is a third solution, and this ham puts ads in QST and CQ. W8 something or other. He has two audio boxes, which are fancy audio filters. So I think one is a graphic equalizer type filter. I would have to look that up also. You have to keep in mind, these are all audio filters. They are not radio filters. So we're not talking about passband skirts or anything. We're talking about audio bandwidth, audio frequencies. The Heil unit is a parametric, so everything is adjustable. And there's a few things out there, but it's all audio. There's no radio frequencies involved with these units. K2RW, WB2GXM.
I am guessing, Rich, that there are kinds of digital signal processing filters where across the audio passband, every 50 hertz, there's an individual slide switch, so to speak, where I can determine how much of 50 to 80 hertz comes through, and how much 80 to 110 hertz comes through, and how much 110 to 200 hertz comes through, and so on. Individual slide switches where I can tailor the audio passband, which is really the equivalent. Very few of our audio systems go down to 0 hertz, and very few of them go up to 20 kc. So there really is the equivalent of a lower skirt and an upper skirt on an audio system, and a passband selectivity on an audio system. I'll bet you some of these guys have a very elaborate back sandal circuit. In the old days, a back sandal circuit just had a knob for how strong is the low frequencies and a knob for how strong is the high frequencies, and the middle frequencies always came through at the same amplitude. Back sandal had an interesting circuit that was in popular electronics way back in the dark ages. But the modern day circuits, every 50 hertz or so, I can select how much amplitude I've got of that particular signal, and maybe even the phase shift of the signal. So I'll bet you some of these audio systems have some of that characteristic, where I can take a not so flat microphone in a slightly not so clean room and tailor the mic so that I sound better over my rig. WB2GXM, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Absolutely. actually, Dick, you're actually talking about audiographic equalizers, which have been used extensively in stereos and in the music industry. In fact, you could probably use a music industry equalizer for any of these applications. Of course, for amateur radio, you don't need down below 60, 40 or 60 hertz, and you really don't need above 15 kilohertz or so. Now, you got me looking through CQ to see if I can find the ad for this guy. But, yeah, and the Heil unit is basically a fancy graphic equalizer, except it's parametric. One knob does the work of the 20 knobs you'd find in a graphic equalizer, which each one adjusts a fixed frequency. I'm still looking. T2RW, WB2GSM.
Since you said one knob, I presume you've got some kind of a subroutine where that one knob is adjusting 50 hertz now, and then you flip that subroutine, and now that one knob is adjusting 100 hertz, and later on that one knob is adjusting 200 hertz. That's right. I think that's what you're saying, as opposed to individual slide switches in order to do the audio equalizing. Is that sort of true, Rich? Go ahead.
Yes, Dick, that's it exactly, except it's actually not a subroutine. It's not the Heil unit and parametric equalizers in the music industry are not computer-operated units. It's all analog. And the parametric knob adjusts, it selects what frequency you want to attenuate or boost. And the fancy units will have two or more parametric knobs where you can boost or cut a few different frequencies by themselves, whereas with a fixed graphic equalizer you might have 20, 30 or even 40 knobs or sliders which all operate on fixed frequencies. T2RW, WB2GXM.
Yep, that's a lot of fun. Many of us buy a rig, have a mediocre quality microphone on it, get on the air and start talking. And with the right kind of high quality microphone and the right kind of graphic equalizer, most of us can made to sound a lot nicer with the proper tailoring. Of all the things that we've talked about so far tonight, anybody listening to me can now ask your questions or give us further comments. So if there's any further questions or comments on any subject we've discussed tonight, or a new subject, give me a call in as a name right now after the beeps. K2RIW in the TechNet.
GXM, one last comment.
Okay, we're going to take Rich first. Go ahead, Rich.
K2RIW, WB2GXM. One last thing. I did find the ad, and this ad is for W2IHY, W2 India Hotel Yankee Technologies Incorporated. It's in CQ and QST, and he makes at least two different audio equalizers specifically made for amateur radio use. Okay, K2RW, WB2GXM clear.
Okay, does the ad say how much that costs, Rich?
The ad does not. You'd have to call them up.
Okay. Almost like what happens with antennas. In QST magazine, no antenna will have a gain number associated with the antenna. Because they discovered a long time ago the manufacturers were fibbing when it comes to gain. They realized that many people were trying to buy the most number of dB of gain per dollar. So everybody was claiming crazy numbers that are beyond the laws of physics. No. Within the sound of my voice, you guys that are listening, anybody have any further questions or comments on any subject that we've discussed up to now, or a new subject, give me a call out as a name right now. K2RIW listening.
N2QMU, Bell, N2QMU.
Okay, we got Bill. Anyone else?
NY2H, Lou.
Lou recognized. So far we got Bill and Lou. Anyone else? More than enough. So Bill, into Quebec Mike Uniform. You've got it, Bill. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Question about if I want to try a folded dipole on 2 meters, 300 ohms, could you give any hints on how to make the balance to match that with the 50 ohms of the transceiver?
Okay, I have done just that. Made a folded dipole out of 300 ohm twin lead in the old days, and the transmission line coming down from it was also 300 ohm. Used it on 432. And to make 50 ohms to 300 ohms is what, a 6-to-1 balun. And I didn't have a 6-to-1 balun in 1972 when I was doing this. I made a 4-to-1 balun. A so-called half-wave coaxial balun does a beautiful job. It's quite broadband. It probably would cover 420 to 460 megacycles inclusive with good response. A half-wave coaxial balun consists of a piece of transmission line of any impedance, doesn't matter what the impedance is, which is electronically a half wavelength long. Bend it into a U shape, bend it back onto itself, solder the shields together, bring in another third piece of transmission line, another piece of transmission line, and bring all three shields together. The center conductor of the input transmission line goes to one of the center conductors of the U-shaped piece of transmission line. Your 300 ohm twin lead in this case connects between the two center conductors of the U-shaped line. One center conductor is being fed by the input transmission line, and the other one is being fed by the signal that walks down that U-shaped piece of tubing. That is a so-called half-wave coax balun. You would be amazed how high in performance that is. And so, even though your antenna is 300 ohms, and this is a 4-to-1 transmission line transformer, balun is only a 4-to-1, that'll give you a 1.5 standing wave ratio, worst case, if you know what I mean. Close enough to get you on the air.
Repeater, timeout.
In your case, if you're feeding a 300 ohm folded dipole, you'd like to have a 6-to-1 balun. And I'm sure there are people out there that'll sell you a 6-to-1 balun. And there's probably ways where you can take a toroidal transformer of the right material, and with the right kind of windings on it, you can make an exact 6-to-1 impedance matching baluning device. But for UHF frequencies, the half-wave coax balun on 2 meters, 450, and 1296 does a beautiful, simple job. So that'll get you started. Over to you on that one, Bill. And Bill, wait for the beeps before you come back to me. November 2, Quebec Mike Uniform, K2RIW. You got to build into the beeps.
I guess more what I had in mind was like a bigger version of a TV balun, with something like the last thing you mentioned, sort of like a transformer or an inductor or something like that, that was center tapped, that could transform the 50 to 200.
There's various kinds of television balans that are made as kind of an RF coil that, if you're doing nothing but receiving, will do the job quite well. But I don't think you must transmit more than a watt through that thing, if you know what I mean. This half-wave coax balun that I just described to you, at first you're going to feel uncomfortable because it doesn't seem to have a center tap. There is electronically a center tap in there. The signal coming out of that half-wave coax balun is very well balanced. At one instant of time, the right-hand side of the output transmission line will be plus 1 volt, and the left-hand side will be minus 1 volt during that half cycle. It has the equivalent of a center tap, even though you don't see it. So don't discard the half-wave coax balun, because built out of the right materials, it can easily take a kilowatt. But the kind of a balancing device you had in the old-fashioned television sets, for receiving, great, but I don't think you can transmit through it. And someday you may want to transmit through it, Bill. W2QMU, K2RIW in the TechNet. And by the way, there's got to be some good websites on this subject.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much.
Let's see what Lou's got to say tonight. WY2H, I think it is, Lou. K2RIW. possibly you're coming in through the Sylvan repeater, which I'll find out real soon. You've got it, Lou. KQRAW in the check, man.
Hey, good evening, Dick. NY2H, New York, to Honolulu. NY2H, I'm coming in Glen Oaks. How's that? Am I good enough?
More than good enough, and I'm hearing you're great on the input. How in the world are you doing that? You're running a Yagi or quite a bit of steam out there? Because I think you're out in the on the South Fork of Long Island.
Yeah, I'm at Port Jeff Station. Collinear on the roof. About 160 feet above sea level. So, nothing spectacular. Stock ICOM 706. So, what is that, maybe 20, 25 watts right now. Anyway, I wonder if you're familiar with the story that came out a little while ago regarding the U.S. Embassy in Cuba, in Havana, Cuba. And there are some diplomats that experience noises and sounds and ultimately got sick and were sent home. There's a story in the Post, September 1st, headline, Microwaves are the main suspect in attack on U.S. diplomats in Cuba. So it purports that there's a possibility that there's a microwave weapon which is targeted at these individuals. Have you heard of that at all?
I think I've heard a little bit about it, Lou. And I start off kind of skeptical. And I'd say it's impossible, but to really do it would be, you'd be amazed how difficult it is to do what you're describing. The word microwave sounds a hell of a lot more dangerous than high frequency, we'll say. High frequency 80s, you know, 3 for 30 megacycles sounds pretty innocent. And by the time you get up to microwave, boy, it sounds like this is, you know, real cancer-causing stuff. The defining document for the United States when it comes to radio frequency biohazard is the American National Standards Institute C95 report, Charlie 95 report, which is probably now up to Rev Foxtrot, Red Gulf, Rev Revision Hotel, something like that. And it's a pretty deep document in technical language. But when you study that document, you find out that pound for pound, 1,500 megacycles and above microwave frequencies are 5 to 1 safer than VHF. The most dangerous region is 30 to 300. That's where between 30 and 300 megs, almost all the RF energy hits the human being, gets absorbed and turned into heat. But that heat that gets absorbed is only the first centimeter or so. When you get up to microwaves, it's probably not even a centimeter that the RF energy, it's 5 to 1 safer. And let me drop it. Because 80% of the microwave energy that hits the human being reflects off your skin, and only 20% of it penetrates, and the 20% that penetrates doesn't penetrate very far. Penetrates, you know, about a centimeter or even less, maybe. So if you want to give the internal organs, the brain, the liver, the stomach, or whatever, thermal grief, and by the way, RF energy, microwave energy, and RF energy in general, does not do anything to a human being but create a thermal effect. The RF energy that's absorbed gets turned into heat, and as long as that heat doesn't raise your body temperature or some ridiculous number of degrees Fahrenheit, that no damage occurs. And by the time you get enough RF energy into a human being, you will feel that heat. You will know something is going on, and you know to run out of there. For it to be innocent, undetected as far as your normal senses are concerned, and still doing you damage, I won't say it's impossible, but it's very difficult. What would the motivation be? It would require very fancy equipment, and the chances of it being effective, even if you're a really nasty guy and you want to make these people unhappy, the chances of you pulling that off successfully are very unlikely. Let me drop it. What we're really fighting here is a vocabulary problem. In the early days when scientists studied antennas, they realized that a signal going into an antenna gets transmitted by the antenna in essentially all directions when it comes to simple antennas like dipoles and monopoles and end-fed ZEPs. So the signal comes out in almost all directions. It radiates. So therefore, the signal coming out of an antenna in 1910 was called RF radiation. Perfectly good word. In until World War II came along, and now we've got nuclear radiation. And people assume that microwave energy is as dangerous as nuclear energy. Nuclear energy has subatomic particles moving at close to the speed of light, a little bitty subatomic bullets penetrating your body and disturbing your DNA and doing damage that can create cancer. Nuclear energy can do that. RF energy is a wave. It is not particles. And that wave, when it's absorbed by a human being, a short distance into the human being, gets absorbed and turned into heat. So the chances of RF energy creating the damage to the human being that we're discussing, I won't say it's impossible, but boy, it would be very difficult to do that. If I could put the human being into something that's a supersized microwave oven, and I carefully adjust the frequency and the amplitude inside that microwave oven that's reflecting that signal and bringing it into the human being on all sides simultaneously, and now I'm concentrating on his stomach, his liver, his brain, I think with some difficulty I might be able to do that. For somebody to be doing that at an embassy from a remote location or even by burying things in the walls, as I said, I won't think it's impossible, but boy, would that be difficult. We're fighting a vocabulary problem here. Even if I had, let me drop this. Even if somebody wanted to scare me, even though it doesn't do any damage, but they want to scare me, and I bring good instrumentation into that embassy, and I take a measurement, and I find out that, gee, a 1,500 megacycle microwave signal is coming from the north into this embassy, and that signal has got an amplitude of 10 microwatts per square centimeter, which used to be the old not-to-exceed number, which, by the way, is a big number. To do that from across the street would require a lot of power and a lot of hardware. So even if I made this measurement of 10 microwatts per square centimeter of RF energy, 10 milliwatts, I think it's a number of 10 milliwatts. If I measure 10 milliwatts per square centimeter, which I think is like 20 watts per square meter, if I made that kind of a measurement in that laboratory, in that embassy, and I would say, yeah, somebody's trying to do something nasty. That used to be the level at which you could continuously bathe a human being with, and it was believed to have no deleterious effects. So as you can tell, to get it above a number where it could do damage to a human being without the human being detecting it, and doing anything more than just scaring the human being because instrumentation can measure the signal, I'm starting off very skeptical. There were very similar complaints going on with the Soviet embassy all the way back in the 1970 time frame. In that particular case, the microwave energy going into the Soviet embassy, the American embassy in Moscow, that microwave energy was lighting up the bugging device, the acoustic bugging devices, is what the signal was doing. It wasn't intended to give damage to the human beings. It was lighting up the bugging devices. And maybe there's something similar going on with the San Juan embassy, but I kind of doubt it. The biggest problem in Puerto Rico is that there was a huge misunderstanding. Starting off...
Repeater, time out.
Starting off with Mr. Trump as to how much damage was done to the electrical system and to the human beings and to the water supply system and the food supply system, how much damage those hurricanes did in Puerto Rico was hugely misunderstood for a long period of time. They thought, at first they thought 60 people were damaged, and now we know it's close to 3,000 people were probably killed by that hurricane, and the grief that Puerto Rico was suffering is way underestimated for a long period of time. So I know I probably drifted pretty far from your original subject, but these are my thoughts on Puerto Rico and my skepticism on this particular article, if you know what I mean, Lou. NY2H, K2LIW, the TechNet. Wait for the beeps.
NY2H. All right, yeah, this was Havana, Cuba, and our embassy. According to the article, it says analysts cite the Frey effect, F-R-E-Y, named after an American scientist who discovered that microwaves can make victims think they're hearing loud noises like ringing and buzzing, or even human voices. And it says even deaf people are susceptible to this effect. Alan Frey, who's 83 now, told The Times possible microwave strikes which can harm the brain were set off by Cubans, possibly those supporting Russia. The goal, he theorized, was sabotaging Havana's growing ties with Washington. The embassy is now empty. Let me let it drop. And as far as using microwaves, some of the other articles I heard regarding this story, there was speculation that there's a weapon exists also. I don't know if you call it a weapon, but it's to disperse crowds, and that's kind of what you were saying, where you would feel the heat. It would actually raise your body temperature. You'd be so uncomfortable that you would flee. So they think that's around, that they can break crowds up with that. One more paragraph here. It says, the United States has explored the idea of turning microwaves into invisible bullets that can disable adversaries. Air Force scientists have tried to beam intelligible words and sentences into the heads of enemies, according to the report. And the Navy has looked at causing, quote, painful discomfort, end quote, possibly even paralyzing whoever the waves were aimed at. It's not known if such weapons were ever deployed. So, I don't know, this is in the Post, but they cite the Times, nothing is conclusive. But this is somebody's theory. And, yeah, it would probably require a lot of high tech, a lot of power, and I don't know if they would triangulate how they pull it off, but just wondering what your take was on it. Back to Ned.
The Department of Defense did create a device which has been shown in a couple of magazines over the last year, which operates at 94 gigahertz. It's got a phased array antenna that looks like about 6 feet square or 10 foot square. And so from a couple of hundred yards, that thing can aim a beam of 94 gigahertz at megawatts of power at a crowd. And the thermal effects you feel on your skin, you'll feel an immediate amount of heat on your skin. And it's a beautiful crowd disperser without damaging the people, if you know what I mean. You feel that heat, and depending on how they modulate it, they can scare the daylights out of you. You're not quite sure what's going on. That's one kind of very high-power microwave circuit that has an effect, a thermal effect on human beings. When it comes to the acoustic effect, let me drop. Mr. Eugene Fribini, a very smart Dr. Fribini, was operating at Airborne Instruments Laboratory in the early 60s. He did an experiment and wrote an article for the AIL Record monthly magazine in which he placed his head within a couple of feet of the feed horn that was in front of a microwave dish that was a radar system operating at the megawatt level. So the individual pulses were around a megawatt. He put his head in front of that feed horn, and he would hear pulses of noise in his head, which was the rep rate of the radar. The actual amount of power required to be poured into a human being, that you hear this acoustic effect, is huge. A megawatt radar a couple of feet away from the feed horn has that effect. If you're trying to do this from across the street, the amount of power you'd have to transmit to do that, to get the acoustic effect, you'd probably have a problem with arcing over the air in front of that transmitter, if you know what I mean, to run that high a power. You'd have to run portions of that equipment in a vacuum to keep it from arcing over. So the amount of power required to pour into a human being where you hear the acoustic effect is humming, the so-called Frey effect. The study on that, and there was an article in the Microwave Theory and Techniques magazine, monthly journal, let me drop it. What they finally discovered that's going on is that each individual microwave pulse going into a human being's head gets focused in the center of the head, a little bit like as if your head was a crystal ball, but it's operating at microwave frequencies. And so a little bit of the brain material is absorbing that thermal energy, that RF energy being turned into heat, maybe being heated a micro degree, but it's being done with a very sharp waveform. And so you're creating this pulse of expansion. It turns out the human brain material has got a very high coefficient of thermal expansion. You heat up the human brain just a little bit and it expands. So the instantaneous expansion from this micro degree of heating creates an acoustic pulse that spreads from the center of the brain out to the cranium. And inside that cranium is your hearing system, and it's very sensitive in that location. So the acoustic effect you're hearing is thermal heating of the individual pulses. And it takes a lot of microwave energy to do that. But to do that from across the street, so to speak, again, I'm skeptical. So an awful lot of these so-called microwave damaging effects that people report from time to time turn out to be psychosomatic. Let me drop this. You guys have probably heard the story of what happened in Reims, France, a couple of years ago. And this was reported in Antennas and Propagation Journal, IEEE Antennas and Propagation. In Reims, France, a cell site was erected alongside of an apartment building, you know, probably 200 or 300 feet away. And the people in the apartment building started developing all kinds of mysterious effects. Upset stomach and headaches and nausea and trouble sleeping and whatever. And they were putting tinfoil on the windows and doing all kinds of complaining. They finally created a lawsuit against the cell site. And the local judge says there's no proof that that this cell site is really creating all of this grief to all of these people who are living in this multi-story apartment building. But because the grief is so great, the number of people so great, I, the judge, I'm going to order that the cell site be removed. And so the cell site was ordered to be removed, and the cell site company, the technicians doing the removal, said, this is crazy. We had erected the tower. We had installed some of the transmission lines. We hadn't installed any of the antennas yet. The thing wasn't on the air. All of this grief that these people were suffering was from the visual presence of a cell site next to their apartment building, and it wasn't even operational. So as you can tell, the fear of RF radiation. See, the engineers designing antennas in 1910 should have called it RF transmission and RF signaling. The fact that they called it RF radiation created the problem 30 years downrange, when nuclear radiation came along. And people make the mistake of mixing together nuclear radiation with RF radiation, particularly microwave radiation. Boy, they think that's going to create cancer right away. And they're so darn different. One is a wave and the other is particles. So,
Repeater, time out.
I'll bet you all of the studies that have been done in Havana to try to find out what's going on, I'll bet you almost all of those studies, no matter how hard they tried, are negative so far, because what they're looking for is very difficult to confirm. I mean, for it to be strong enough to create the grief that the people are complaining about would require instrumentation that would be very difficult to hide. So there's a good chance that this is a psychosomatic effect. Somebody created a rumor, and the rumor caught on. By the same token, somebody created a rumor, town of Bayville, Long Island, that every antenna creates cancer. So the whole town of Bayville, for the last 4 years, have been putting forth a heroic effort to remove every single radio antenna from that town. Fire, police, ambulance, cell sites, cell towers. They want every antenna removed from that town because they believe it's creating cancer. Someone has convinced, some very charismatic person has written a bunch of articles, and he's created a website called Babel Residents Against Cell Towers, BRAC, B-R-A-K, or something like that. Babel Residents Against Cell Sites or Cell Towers. And, boy, he's got everybody in that town unhappy. If a ham radio operator like me, let me drop it, drives into that town to visit my relative who lives there. And I remember parking at a gas station in Bayville to fill up my gas tank. And one of the residents of the town came along and said, are you working for the FBI? Oh, why is that antenna on your car? It was a 5/8 wave mag mount on the roof of my car. And I could tell the guy was very unhappy that my automobile with that antenna was coming into his town. And he was telling me that unless I'm on the FBI doing a very quick survey of some kind, that I should leave immediately with that antenna. It shouldn't be in that town. That's amazing to me. And there's three lawsuits are trying to remove all antennas from that town, and the chances of success are very slim. Over to you, Lou. NY2H, KQIW in the TechNet.
All right, Dick, very fine. I was Googling around here, and apparently that Frey effect goes back to the 60s. So they've been looking at that for a while, but I wonder if we'll ever learn, if they do come up with an answer. Maybe it was... I think they're saying these individuals are showing some brain damage, so I don't know how psychosomatic it might be, but who knows? You know, so many things we don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know, but I thought it was interesting to throw it out there, so. All right, very fine. Thank you very much. K2RW in the TechNet, NY2H.
Lou, give me a couple more words here. How many people, from what you know about this article, how many people have developed brain damage? And how do you assess brain damage? What kind of brain damage? They're having trouble concentrating? They're getting headaches? Having trouble sleeping? How many people? What kind of damage? And how do you quantify that? How long has it been going on? So what little we know from the article that maybe you've read yourself, or maybe you've got it secondhand, how much grief are we talking about here, Lou? NY2H, K2RIW in the TechNet?
Yeah, I don't have all the answers to that. I believe certainly hearing loss was one of the results. But I could look into that further. But for my, just what I have heard, I believe they, I don't know how they quantified it, but we could look that up. If you want, I'll look a little bit further into it as you're going along. But I believe there was actual, you know, documented hearing loss. I don't know what tests were run. I'm just looking through here. I'll take a look, and I'll if I find something, I'll bounce in again.
WS2N.
Call recognized, but one quick question, Lou, before you go away. Did you say that the embassy is now empty, that because of this effect they've emptied the embassy out and no American citizens are there? Is that sort of what you said earlier, Paul? I mean, Lou?
I think I there were two embassies actually that they emptied out.
Wow. To empty both embassies for this apparent effect, if it's real. Paul, WS2N, go right ahead, Paul.
I read the same thing that Lou read just recently. A couple of days ago, the article was confirming that it was microwaves, where it was only a suspicion about a year ago. And they emptied out the Cuban embassy. And Lou might remember, it was either Russia or China. I forgot which one. I thought it was China. And they were having some problem with the embassy there. You know, that was about a year ago, but now they're pretty much confirming it. I also saw it on the news on TV about that same story about a year ago, maybe less, and they were looking into it. And these people have hearing damage, confirmed hearing damage. And the ones they were targeting seemed to be the diplomats and their family. So they pulled them out. Back to you, Dick.
The most recent article you read on this subject, Paul, where was it? Was it in a scientific journal? Was it in Newsday? Was it in the New York Times? Where was it, if you happen to know? And so I think you're saying both the embassy personnel and their families are all experiencing hearing damage. Wow. And now... And they said it was microwaves. Could you do that with acoustics? I think it's a lot easier with acoustics than with microwaves. If it really was microwaves, the amount of power in microwaves required to do that is so huge, you'd have a lot of trouble hiding that hardware. And if they really measured the microwaves, the next question would be, didn't somebody do any sniffing to find out where the microwaves are coming from? So, where did you read that article, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW?
KM comment.
It might have been Newsday. I can't swear on it. I was trying to think about it as Lou was talking. It was a few days ago, too. But I read so many different things on the computers and in the papers that I can't remember. And when they use the word microwave, that's what they use. But, you know, you often wonder, you know, who told the reporters it was microwave? You know, did something get lost in the translation there? Maybe, you know, like what you were discussing earlier, you know, it could be something else, but they're calling it microwave, and the next thing you know, it winds up in the newspaper as that. That's a possibility, but, you know, we don't know yet. Go ahead, Dick.
Okay, somebody else wants to give us some information. And you spoke so fast before the repeater picked you up, I heard nothing but the fact that you had some further information. So give us your call letters and name, and go right ahead with your information, K2RIW in the TechNet. Squeeze the mic, wait a second, and then give us the information.
Yeah, it's tough to squeeze in sometimes, so I try to do it quickly. KC1, SAM. About a year ago, it was in the Cuban embassy, and it was thought to be ultrasonics. Recently, they changed that terminology to microwaves. Now, very recently, maybe within the last 2 weeks or a month, they have picked it up in China. I don't remember exactly where in China. And again, that has suddenly become microwaves. The microwave doesn't make a lot of sense. The ultrasound sounds more plausible. And I think I did see it on the news, but I think I read it in the Times also.
So, where you said it, at one time it was called ultrasound, another time it was called microwave. Boy, there's a lot of difference between the two. And you would think that if they detected the actual signal itself that's creating the grief, I mean, if you and I were assigned the task of making a measurement, is there ultrasound, is there microwave, is there something that can create grief to a human being, which requires an extremely large amplitude, so therefore you don't need super sensitive equipment to measure it. And once you've got the equipment to make the measurement, the next thing you're going to do is aim the equipment in various directions to find out where it's coming from. Is it coming from the same building? Is it coming from across the street? The fact that you get a report like this, where people are reporting all kinds of grief and leaving embassies, and they don't tell you quantitatively what it is or where it's coming from, it sounds kind of strange. I guess the possibility exists that somebody set up temporary equipment, did a blast of energy that created grief, disassembled the equipment, and took it away in a hurry before anybody... Well, wait a minute now. If the equipment was taken away, you wouldn't be able to make the measurement to confirm. So it sounds like somebody made a measurement that did a confirmation. And that confirmation measurement, you would think somebody would use his instrumentation, aim it in various directions to find out where it's coming from. As you can see, there's a hell of a lot of missing information in this story, Sam. KC1, SAM, K2RIW, go ahead, Sam.
I suspect, like most things, the government knows a lot more than it's saying. They certainly have the ability to measure microwave radiation, and they certainly have the ability to measure ultrasound. And especially since the Russians did that with microwave many, many years ago, I'm sure when that embassy gets put up, that's part of testing they do, and the equipment's right there on the premises. So they know whether it was ultrasound or microwave, and we might not know, but I'm sure they know what it is. But yeah, there was supposedly some permanent damage to hearing and maybe something else. I don't remember exactly what. Anyway, that's the limited knowledge I have on it. Back over to you, Dick. Thank you.
Y2H.
Go right ahead, Lou.
So there was an article in the Times also on September 1st, the New York Times, and a couple of things from the article. It says there was a medical team examining 21 affected diplomats, Cuba, and in its detailed report did not mention microwaves. That was published in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, in March. But the study's lead officer, Douglas H. Smith, and the director of the Center for Brain Injury and Repair at the University of Pennsylvania said in a recent interview that microwaves were now considered a main suspect and that the team was increasingly sure the diplomats had suffered brain injury. Let me let it drop. And here's a funny little paragraph. It says, everybody was relatively skeptical at first, he said, and now everyone agrees there's something there. Dr. Smith remarked that the diplomats and doctors jokingly referred to the trauma as the Immaculate Concussion.
Okay, Lou, it sounds like you've read this in the September 1st issue of New York Times. Out of curiosity, Lou, what page is that on? I'm going to go to my library and I'd like to see that. Go ahead.
All righty, well, I'm looking at it on the internet, and it's telling me I only have 2 free articles left. So I don't know if they're going to show a page number. Let's see. But the dateline is September 1st. It's by William J. Broad, B-R-O-A-D. I can give you the URL, and if you didn't use all your free look-sees, you should be able to see it also. So let me know if you want me to do that, but a couple other things, hold on.
Yeah, since they downloaded it to you, Lou, I don't have a subscription to New York Times. I've got a subscription to Newsday, but New York Times I don't have. Since they downloaded it to you, is there any way that you can now transfer what they have downloaded to you to me? My website can easily take 20 or 40 megabytes. And KQRIW@ARRL.net will get it to me. KQRIW@ARRL.net. So is there any way you could transfer that article to me, Lou? NY2H, KQRIW in the TechNet?
I'll copy it. I'll email it to you. I'll probably do it to the other email address, RIW product, because there's more chance that ARRL has to bounce it over to you, and I think if I do it direct, it's a better chance of getting it. Anyway, the FBI, according to this Dr. Frey, who's 83 years old now, the FBI approached him. And I other articles, which I can't vouch for, talked about possibly that they were using 2 microwave frequencies and doing a beat frequency for the audio or something also. So I don't know. You know, when we're talking about particular audio might be more effective. So they may have been beating 2 signals together. But I will do that. All right, let me do that. I'll send this to you. I'll send you the link, and then I'll try to send you, I'll try to copy and paste the article. I can send you an image of the webpage. I'll send you a couple of things, and by hook or by crook, one way or another, you'll get it. But it was, we let it drop, and then I'll come back, and I'm going to give the URL over the air. So, hold on. All right, so the URL is sonic-attack-cube-microwave.html.
Okay, got it. Interesting. No.
I'm not going to send you anything.
Hold on now. I still recommend you try to send it to me because I don't have a subscription to New York Times. They're not going to download that to me. They'll say you'll give us some money and we'll give you X number of articles, if you know what I mean. So try to send that article to me, Lou, since you've got a copy of it. By some means, you've got a subscription. And I have a lot of trouble getting subscriptions into my Linux system for some crazy reason. In order to have enough RF energy to get an acoustic effect in a human being requires a huge amount of energy. The fact that you're beating two signals together, and you think the beat note is now going to give you an acoustic sound, that lowers the requirement by a couple of dB. It's not going to, I mean, it takes such a huge amount of power to get an acoustic effect by microwave. Now, by ultrasonics, maybe. Beat two ultrasonic signals together. I can see how the beat note can come out in the middle of the audio band. But to do that with microwaves, wow. As you can tell, I'm skeptical. And what would the motivation be? Who would have a motivation to want the American ambassadors in Cuba to be removed from their post? Why would somebody want to do that? Got any guesses on that one, Lou? NY2H, KQLIW on the TechNet.
Well, I did see speculation in another article. They actually were listing potential frequencies and power levels, and I recall it saying for some reason or other you would need less power than some of the baseline power levels that were regarded as not safe. So I have to look for that one again, but I have no backing on that. That wasn't the Times, so that might have been anybody. So the motivation apparently was around that time. Don't forget, we were loosening up relations with Cuba. I think it was before this current administration, and the feeling was that some of our adversaries were not comfortable with that. That, I think, is the motivation.
Check the Times will let you read 5 articles a month for free. If they were downloaded to my Linux system. Okay, thank you, Eric. From the reading you did of that Times article, it would be nice if the Times did a good job and referenced other articles. Did they reference any other articles? Lou, go ahead.
Well, let's see. There are some hyperlinks that I could click on. Click on and open up a new tab so I don't lose this one. Dimensions of a human head make a fairly good antenna for picking up microwave signals. There's a sentence. All right, let me right-click this. Scientists say. And that link goes to National Institutes of Health. An abstract on cellular telephone's effect on the brain. The head as an antenna and brain tissue as a radio receiver. That's just one. Yeah, there's a few of there's a few links to other articles. Let me let it drop, and I'll fish around here and see if I can come up with some other ones for you.
That's all I wanted to know, Lou, the fact that there are other articles referenced. That helps. That increases the, what's the word I'm looking for? Authenticity? Wow. That's a tough way to go. And to say that the human head is a good microwave antenna, wow. As I said, the experience that the AIL people had, at least at 1,500 megacycles, it requires a huge amount of power to get an acoustic effect. Peak envelope power is required. And
think to Fry's work.
What did you say? Something Fry's work? What were you saying, Lou?
There's a link which I just clicked on, and it, Alan H. Fry, who discovered this effect. Technical note, auditory system response to radio frequency energy, and it looks like about a 4 or 5 page. It's from a book, so it goes up to page 1142, so this is unless it, I don't know what it's from, but the technical note in some publication. There's a table one transmitter parameters. The frequency was 1310 megacycles on transmitter A and transmitter B. Transmitter A was at 1310 megacycles, and B was at 2982 megacycles. This is back in around 1960. The wavelengths were 22.9 centimeters and 10.4 centimeters. PPS, pulses per second, I guess, 244 for one, 400 for the other. Pulse width was 6 microseconds on one, 1 microsecond on the other. Duty cycle was 0.0015, and the other was 0.0004. So, without going any further, you know, from that article, you can dig down. I'm sure there's so much out there, and it, you know, this is just hidden bits from my point of view as I, you know, bring these up to you. You know, I'd have to really sit down and do it in a more orderly fashion. But apparently, yes, you can dig down. Apparently, there is authenticity, and, you know, you can go from there. NY2H.
That's amazingly close, Lou. When Dr. Eugene Frubini at AIO did that acoustic experiment, he was operating at 1350 megahertz. The radar was putting out something close to 300 pulses per second. Each pulse was something like 6 microseconds long, and each pulse was around a megawatt of power out of a magnetron. So amazingly close frequency, rep rate, pulse duration. And it took a tremendous amount of power for him to hear that acoustic effect inside of his head. So these articles tell you what frequency, what rep rate. It's obvious by the numbers they're giving you that it was a radar. In the early days of 1950, 1940, 1960, various people wanted to know, is a radar dangerous? And so various people were putting their head near a radar to see what happens. So the easiest way to get a hold of a high-power signal at 1,300 megacycles at 300 pulses per second is to find somebody's FPS-20 radar, FPS-8, FPS-20. These were the popular radars that had a parabolic dish that was, I don't know the exact number, but probably about 15 feet wide and about 8 or 10 feet high, parabolic-shaped section of an antenna. You see these antennas quite often at airports for ground control approach. Let me drop
it. He's got a page here outlining the hearing loss of individuals that were tested way back then.
Wow. And by the way, the FPS 8 and 20 is around 1,300 megs. The ASR 5, I think it is, radar that's used at airports runs at something like 2,900 megs. That's what the other frequency is. So these are radars. One is a air-controlled radar at airports, civilian, and the other one is a military radar. So only coincidental, the frequencies, the rep rates, and so on. So you're telling me that with those pulse rep rates, they were quantifying hearing loss? Is that what the implication is, Lou? Over to you, Lou, KQRIW.
Yeah, he's got four charts, and not only hearing loss, but I think physical manifestations like scarring. Subject one, the right ear was moderately scarred and thickened. The left ear showed a clean radical mastoidectomy cavity. Subject one did not hear the RF sound even when the power density was 30 times that needed for the normal threshold. Subject two, the person showed manifestation of otosclerosis. Heard the RF sound at approximately the same power density level needed to induce threshold perception in normal. So now, I don't know if these were pre-existing. Did he have that before, or that was a result? Again, I'm just looking at this, you know, for the first time. Tinnitus persisted, blah, blah, blah. It appeared from the series. Now, maybe these were people that they chose with hearing. a lot to dig into there. I'll send you the first audio.